With the first pick in the 2003 NBA draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select LeBron James.
With the 13th pick in the 1996 NBA draft, the Charlotte Hornets select Kobe Bryant.
With the first pick in the 2015 NBA draft,
with the third pick in the 2018 NBA draft,
with the first pick in the 1998 NBA draft,
with the first pick in the Orlando Magic,
Michael Olcandy.
With the first pick in the 2019 NBA Draft, the New Orleans Pelicans select Zion Williamson from Duke University.
Welcome to Robin Hoop, an NBA Draft show here on Dash Radio's Nothing Net channel, where we bring rich takes to the poorly informed. All right, this week we jump in full force to an episode focused on Grant Riller out of Charleston, the Charleston Cougars to be precise, a player that I've really started to dive into a lot more recently than I had before, and I will say a lot to like. Whether you're diving into the statistics, whether you're watching full games, highlights, I'm telling you, Grant Riller is one of my favorite prospects in this draft. I'm not saying he's going to be, you know, going to go in the top 10. I'm not saying he's going to be a lottery pick, although stranger things, I will say, but there's so much to like about his game. And I'm going to say something that maybe is a little controversial for some people. I'm going to say that I actually think he's going to be really good on offense and defense. That's what's a little controversial, I think, regarding Grant Riller. One of the things that people like to talk about with Grant is a lack of effort on the defensive end. I look at this draft class, and there's other players, though, you could say the same thing, whether that's LaMelo Ball, whether that's to the extreme Anthony Edwards, who was very poor defensively. Grant Riller, an instance here where I would say there were moments where he played very good defense, and a lot of that actually really tied into, I think, the importance of the moment, but also the importance of the game. And so in that regard, yes, you could rip him a little bit, just saying, okay, I expected effort to always be there, and I didn't see that. But here's what I'm going to say. Very similar, again, to some of these other players that we've mentioned before. At a certain point, you have to prioritize how you're going to use your energy on the basketball court, especially if you're playing major minutes, which, of course, Grant Riller was, because he was the key to the success of the Cougars. If it was not for him, that team would not have been as successful as they were. Now, you have to prioritize, and if you're Grant Riller, and he is absolutely fantastic on the offensive end. In fact, if you were to tell me you thought he was the best offensive player in this draft, honestly, I could see it, at least scoring-wise. I'm not going to necessarily say he's like off the charts just in terms of passing, vision, things like that, but just the overall package that you get with Grant Riller is so impressive. Let's dive into some of those numbers. Now, overall, when we look at offense, he is in the 89th percentile, which would be an excellent rating, 1.03 points per possession. Jumping ahead, how about this? The overall half court, 92% rank, excellent, and at 1.045 points per possession. So a lot to like there. Out of bounds, both of those excellent in the 90 percentiles, whether it's end or side. So you look at that, and it's pretty impressive. And how about this? And this really speaks to just how good of a ball handler he is. But when man defense is attacking, he is in the 93rd percentile, an excellent rating, of course, 1.053 points per possession. Now, against the zone, he does drop quite a bit. But a lot of that, I think, is the team that he's on. Again, when a guy has to do that much more, the zone definitely plays a bigger role in success because you need your teammates to be able to do that as well. One of the things that people ask about when they're looking at Grant Riller is that offensive game going to fully translate to the next level? Because if it doesn't, then there's going to be more question marks. And the reason why I bring this up now is because when you're talking about a team concept, the importance when you're really, really good on offense is that you now have that the offensive gravity that goes towards you and is going to free up your teammates. So, for example, I don't look at his offensive game in terms of passing and vision as something that's necessarily elite. Although I will say from year one to year two or year four, he has really, really improved. So I have seen strides in that area, and it's good to see, and hopefully that continues. But a big part of that's going to be his offensive gravity. And if he does not draw the defenders in with his game, if he's not successful offensively, I don't think that his passing is going to be able to be as successful as it has been. So that's going to be one thing to watch for going forward. Some of the other things you want to look at as a pick-and-roll ball handler, he's in the 97th percentile, an excellent rating. Over 1.1 points per possession. Watch him on the court, and it is absolutely fantastic. I mean, seriously, there is so much to like about his game on that end. One of the best ball handlers, if not the best ball handler in the draft. Very good finisher, and a good three-point shooter. Not a great three-point shooter, but a good three-point shooter. It's not one of those areas where you say to yourself, I have concerns. I do think that he's going to be fine at the next level. You know, looking specifically at this year at the shooting numbers, 36% from three, down a little bit from 39% in his junior season, 83% or just underneath 83% from the free throw line, and overall field goal percentage 55%. And that's because as a jump shooter, as a finisher, he is so incredibly complete as a player. He has all the different shots as well, whether it's ways to get to the rim. He has all that because of his offensive ability. Very good spin player. So when he's driving, he's able to control the spin, finish at the hoop. His step back game is absolutely fantastic. I mean, seriously, if you're not familiar with Grant Riller, if there's one thing that you take from this show this week, go and look at Grant Riller film. Go and look. And this is one of those instances where I'll say, actually, if you were to take the time to look at his highlight film, it's so impressive in many aspects that I think that even in itself will tell you a lot about his game. Normally you want to watch an entire, start to finish basketball game to really get a good view, but his offensive game is just so unique. I do think there's a lot of things that you can draw from his highlight film that's going to get you to at least understand a lot of things about him as a player. Now, we mentioned that his passing isn't like off the charts good. You know, 1.26 assist to turnover ratio, that's nothing necessarily to brag about. Now, specifically looking at a one game in particular that I want to mention, and I think this says a lot about him as a player. The game against Northeastern, where he had a triple-double, you watch that game start to finish, and honestly, if you did not know he had a triple-double, I don't think visually you would say to yourself, wow, I bet he had a triple-double, or that was so impressive. Not that it was a bad game, but it was so quiet. And you see that from, to me, some of the best players out there are able to do that really, really quietly. One guy that comes into mind as far as just kind of that quiet dominance, you see it as a Timberwolves fan, I come up with a couple names. But Kevin Love and Karl-Anthony Towns. Now, completely different players. They're not related at all, just in terms of their skill sets and things like that. But those were players, to me, that when you watch them play, all of a sudden, you're like, wow, that guy's got 15 points and 8 rebounds, and we're only in the second quarter? That kind of thing where you just say to yourself, that's so quiet. And now to bring the Timberwolves back into this a little bit as well, what part of the thing I watch with Grant Riller, and I do have a little bit of a concern, is that he's so incredibly calm, or in some cases nonchalant, on the basketball court. In case in point, when I said Timberwolves, I look at Andrew Wiggins. Now, I'm not saying they're the same players at all, but that's a concern that Wiggins had, obviously, coming out of college, and he never addressed that. He never became a different player. That's just who he is. And you're going to learn a lot more about Grant Riller as the person and the player later on in this show when we go through our interviews. And that's one of those things that you realize about Grant Riller is that he's just a calm individual. The nice thing about that, and the reason why I'm not worried, is that if you're going to jump into the NBA, The biggest thing, I think, is some guys maybe panic. There's going to be situations that you're going to be in the NBA that you've never been in before. A lot of these players come into the NBA, and they're used to dominating at all the levels they've played at. You jump into the NBA, and it's a completely different game. And now, not only that, we're talking about a player that wasn't at like a big-time school. You know, this is a lower-tiered school, College of Charleston, and nothing against the College of Charleston. It's just the level of competition that you're playing there versus if you're playing at Duke, if you're playing at these bigger schools, that makes a difference. And what's nice about Grant Riller is you watch him on the court and you don't say to yourself, this is a guy that panicked, because he doesn't. That's the thing. Now, we talked about his defense earlier and how there's question marks about what he's doing as far as effort on that end. The nonchalant concerns are there on that portion of his game because sometimes he just kind of loses sight of what's going on the court because he ball watches too much. When he gets to the next level, that has to change. And the other reason I mentioned nonchalant is for such a good shooter in an offensive game, I'd like to see that 82% or 83% right in that ballpark. I'd like to see that get higher. I would like to see him be a better free throw shooter. And there were times where I would see him shoot a free throw and it was too cavalier. It was just like too relaxed. And there's a difference between being relaxed and just kind of going through the motions, I guess. You see some players when they go up there and it looks so effortless that they make free throws. And a lot of times that's the case with Riller. But just every so often, I think he loses a little focus there. And that's my only concern. But it's not a big enough concern where I worry at the next level. I think Grant Riller's offensive game is going to translate so incredibly well. And that's one thing I just want to stress, is that ultimately, if you're a team in this draft, especially given a lot of people think this is maybe a weaker draft class, to me, I look at this and I say to myself, this is a guy that people need to take a chance on. Because if you look at the statistics, if you watch the game film, if you see what type of player he is, if he was doing this at a higher level of competition in college, there's a chance he might be the number one overall pick. I mean, you look at guys like LaMelo Ball and Anthony Edwards. I mean, LaMelo Ball's not playing at some high level, right, of competition. The NBL is a low level of competition. I mean, that's just the fact. But he's viewed differently just because of his story. And if you're Grant Riller, that's part of your issue too, is that you're not as young as some of these other guys. You're not as young as LaMelo Ball. You're not as young as Anthony Edwards. You've played 4 years of college basketball. That does get taken into account. Whether that's fair or not, how much that factors into a team's decision, that's up to you to decide. But ultimately, the key for me and what sets him apart from a lot of seniors that have that come into the league and maybe you're a little concerned about the age is that his skill set on offense is so incredibly vast that if I'm a team, honestly, I am all in on Grant Riller and I want to take him. Now, where he ends up going, that's kind of a tough call. I don't have him placed yet. I don't know where I'm necessarily comfortable taking him. That'll be later down in the episodes when I kind of go through my more of a finalized big board. Because right now, I'm just kind of visualizing where I want guys and going through the process of really diving into individuals as well as like tiers and groupings of players. So if we look at some of the more, I guess a little bit more of the synergy statistics on Grant Riller, one area that he is not as successful as some of the others is driving to the left. Now, driving to the right, he is excellent across the board. And we're talking, in some instances, a large number of possessions. But now you look at driving left, where driving left has more possessions. Granted, it's only one more possession, but surprising given that he's just not as efficient from the left as he is from the right. Whether you're talking pull-up jumpers, drives to the basket, he's not great, and they have him listed just as average. Low rank, 31% pull-up jumpers, 45% drives to the basket. So if you're a team, this is probably something you can watch for as you're defending him. Now, if you're Grant Riller, hopefully when he gets to that next level, teams will say to him, look, here's the deal. Number one, we got to get you better at driving left. We got to get you more consistent on that edge if we can. But on top of that, we got to probably focus more so on going right. Now, you can't go into a game and say to yourself, I'm just going to do this one thing, because there's very few players that are so good that they can just constantly go this direction. You know they're going to do it and still be successful. Now, the one thing Grant Riller has going for him where this could work out in his favor is he's just such an incredible shooter, and he has parts of his game that you just don't see from guys coming out of college, and that step back game is one of the biggest things. Now, one thing we haven't even touched on, and it might be one of his most impressive skills that he has, one of the best, most important, or biggest arrows he has in his quiver, is going to be the first step on offense. That first step is so good. And what also doesn't get talked about enough is just in general, his athleticism. Very athletic. In an interview recently, he talked about how, you know, he had an injury early on in his college career that set him back a little bit athletically, but he feels he wasn't really able to show everything he could as far as athletics on the offensive end, probably the defensive end as well, and he wants to show that more in the NBA, which transitions us into the pre-draft process. What are we going to get for the pre-draft process? Is he going to be able to show off against higher competitions, whether that be in the scrimmages at the combine, whether we're talking about individual workouts or other player workouts like individuals for teams? There's lots of question marks there, and this is a player, very much like we talked about on a previous episode about Jay Scrubb, you could really see Grant Riller open some eyes. Now, granted, I think most eyes are already open considering how good he played. But if he can also go up against that higher level of competition, let's say you're Grant Riller and you say to yourself, all right, I'm going to go into the draft process. I'm going to make the plays. I'm not going to sit out of things. And heck, even if he just did the athletic portion of things, you know, whether it's the shuttle, whether it's going over his vertical, if he does those things and he's still able to impress that way, that's going to help his stock as well. So there's lots of things to like about that. And speaking of his athleticism, this is part of the reason why I do believe in Grant Riller as a defensive prospect. He moves laterally fairly well. When he really wants to be locked in, he's really locked in. And that's where we go back to the flashes. When he jumps to the NBA, the best news for Grant Riller and for Grant Riller fans and for people that want to see him succeed, he doesn't have to have that large burden of carrying the team on his back that at times he had to have at Charleston. He's going to have teammates that are going to help him out. And especially given if he goes in the later part of that first round, you know, let's say he goes in like that 20 to 25 range, he's going to be on a team that's pretty good. And so he's going to have other players around him that can definitely hold their own water. And that's going to be a huge part of his development. Plus, then he's not going to necessarily need to jump in right away if a team feels they want to maybe have him go to the G League, maybe have him focus on some things. But I'm going to say this. I think Grant Riller is good enough where day one, he can step into any team in the NBA and be a contributor. I don't feel like I'm going on the edge or on the ledge too much with that take, but some people probably think so, and we'll see about that. But that's kind of how I feel. I do think he's going to be a very successful player at the next level and ultimately on both ends. At a minimum, I'll say this. At a minimum, I do think he's going to be an average defender. I don't see a scenario where he becomes a negative defender because he's going to get that help, and I'm not that worried about the effort concerns at that point because he's not going to have to focus so much on one aspect of his game. So that's kind of where we're at with that. If we want to go over maybe some other statistics, just to kind of get another feel for some aspects of his game, looking at the post-ups, so he's not a tall player. I think he's listed at 6'3". He's actually probably 6'1". And the NBA is really big on the actual height concerns now. So they are very accurate when it comes to the way they actually calculate height now, and it's very specific. And so you're going to see right away when you go to the combine, we're going to see those measurements, and we'll have a better idea of that. Now, overall in the post-up, 20 possessions, he's in the 87th percentile. Not bad, especially for someone that's not real tall. And again, a lot of that has to do with the way he's able to shoot. He has that step back, that fadeaway very well, and he's a very high IQ player. When you watch Grant Riller play, makes a lot of good decisions on the offensive end and on the defensive end. You know, a bit of a coin flip just depending on the game and the situation. But a lot to like when it comes to his game overall. And time will tell what he ends up turning out to be. But ultimately, I think a team is going to get a very, very good player. And a lot of teams are probably going to regret passing on Grant Riller when all is said and done. So with that said, let's jump in to the interviews. We got a number of great guests for you this week. Again, you're listening to the Robin Hoop NBA Draft Show on Dash Radio's Nothing But Net channel. Welcome back to Robin Hoop, where now we are joined by Richard from Mavs Draft. Richard, thanks for taking the time to join us this week on the show.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you guys for having me. I'm very excited for this episode.
So when I look at this episode, obviously the focus is Grant Riller. When you hear the name Grant Riller, what is it that brought him to your attention? When, you know, when you're evaluating guys, obviously something kind of set you on that path. What is it about him that kind of got on your radar?
Yeah, so his ability to get to the rim is probably second to none in this class. His first step is just one of the best I've ever seen from a college prospect. He just does everything on offense. He checks all the boxes.
Yeah, you know, the crazy thing, the first step is, like you said, one of the best you've ever seen. But on top of that, he's got so many other offensive skills that set him apart from most draft picks. For example, his step back shot. When I watch him take that, you know, the first time, one of the first times I watched him play, you know, he took that a couple times and I'm sitting here thinking to myself, what's he doing? That's not a high percentage shot. And the more and more you watch him, the things that he does, you realize he's not settling. He's just that talented offensively.
Yeah, and shooting off the dribble is clearly one of his biggest strengths. While the shot making isn't always there, his just ability to shoot off the dribble is just incredible, which makes his driving even more threatening because he can do both. And you don't know what you have to guard and his athleticism. That combo is really lethal.
Yeah, they talk about, you know, you hear the phrase a three-level scorer, and I'm not sure you see many prospects that, you know, embody that better than Grant Riller. There's so many things to like about him on that offensive end. And actually, that brings up my next point. If you had to pick one of his offensive skills, and like that was the thing you kind of go, all right, this is what makes him special. Do you think it's that first step?
Yeah, I think it's his ability to get to the rim. That's probably what I would go with.
Yeah, as a versatile player, getting to the rim is one of those things where you feel like that can translate from one level to the next. And you see some of the prospects in this class, such as maybe a guy like Tyrell Terry, for example, that can finish, but physically, you know, he's got some limitations. Whereas I feel like Riller, a lot of what he does, especially because he's a little older, I think physically he's going to be able to step into the league and really contribute day one.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think he's got one of the highest floors in the draft. And like you said, I mean, his ability to get to the rim translates a lot better than other guys' ability just because he has that athleticism that it's really good even for NBA standards. And for me, that's an automatic check mark for going to the next level.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned athletics. And, you know, defensively is one spot where people have concerns about Riller's game. As far as athleticism is concerned, I really think given that, plus his, you know, what he's good at physically, I don't think there's any reason he can't be at least average defensively in the NBA. But let me ask, why do you think he was a poor defender in college?
So I think I don't think it's all necessarily like limitations and things like that we see with a lot of other players. I think it had a lot to do with just the fact that he did everything for that team on offense. And there's no denying he coasted on some plays on defense. And I think it eventually just kind of became a mindset. So getting him out of that would be my biggest challenge on defense. I think he's got the athleticism and all the necessary IQ skills, all of that to actually be a passable defender. It's just up to him to actually, you know, try on defense because he's not going to be having that same role on offense in the NBA, I hope at least, because that is a lot of wear and tear on your body.
Yeah, that's just it. When you watch his Charleston team, I mean, he's the guy, right? I mean, it's kind of similar to like LaMelo Ball. LaMelo Ball, when he's over in the NBL, he's the guy, right? He's got to do it all. And so when you watch Grant Riller, you kind of say to yourself, you got to pick and choose when you're shouldering that large of a load, especially on one end of the court. You kind of, right, you're expected to do so much. It's tough to really be on fire, right, on both ends of the court. So I think when he gets to the NBA, he's going to have more help, first of all, on offense. And then he's going to be put in a better situation, I think, to succeed on defense. And so I think that makes a lot of sense as far as how he's going to kind of translate. Now, aside from defense, what else do you – is there anything else in his game that you maybe find a little concerning?
Yeah, so, I mean – this is super nitpicky. I mean, his jump shot at times can look a little bit long and not so smooth, you know, getting a little bit of a flat release off the ball. But, I mean, that I think just might come with how much he shoots it, that you're in a spot that every once in a while. So I can't figure out if that's what that is or if that's a legitimate flaw, because I see it like once a game, but it's usually on like his 10th, 13th, you know, 15th shot attempt. And I mean, he's had the ball in his hand so much that, I mean, it's hard to say whether or not that's just tired, you know, tired arms and everything. But so I don't know. I don't really know if he has other like glaring flaws, I would say, besides defense.
You know, yeah, you mentioned the shooting aspect, and I think there was a clip. I think you're the one that sent it out. He was shooting a three-point shot, and I think that's where I've noticed it. The issue sometimes with his release is more so on the long ball. What do you think?
Yeah. I think I tweeted that last night, and it was a long three. It was like a very deep three. It was a spot-up three, and it doesn't seem to be an issue inside the three-point line, kind of like you said. It seems to only be as the range extends, which – I think that's going to come with NBA, you know, getting those shots up all the time. It'll eventually come. Just because, I mean, his free throw line and in-game and his mid-range and everything, they're so smooth that stuff will eventually translate. I can't just see him, you know, topping out there, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think with time, that's definitely going to be – I mean, you know, he was 39% the year before, 36% this year. So you definitely are seeing – a guy that can obviously hit the long ball, not high volume necessarily. You know, you're looking at around like four shots per game, but some guys come into the league and it's a huge question mark. Like a good example would be Isaac Okoro. He comes into the league. You're saying, I don't know if he's going to be able to shoot. We don't have that same concern with a guy like Grant Riller. You know, he can shoot, and it's just a matter of maybe getting a little more consistent on that long ball is kind of where I'm at with that.
Yeah, exactly. It's not an issue of will he score, it's how much will he score off of that three-point shot for me.
Yeah, and I think that's very true. And he also would probably be one of the, you know, top 5 to 10 guys picked if it weren't for the fact that he's obviously coming from, you know, a lesser level of competition, which makes me wonder, when you look at his game, do you think it's going to translate well when you see, because it's a pretty drastic jump in terms of level of competition?
Yeah, I think it translates pretty well. I know two of the defenders that he had to go against twice in that conference were, I know they were all defense in the conference, but I mean, they were two of the best defenders just overall. And even in matchups in non-conference that he lit them up. I mean, it was Isaac Likely off Oklahoma State, one of the better defenders in the conference. I mean, he was able to beat him, no issue. And same thing for the two guys in conference. I think they were on Hofstra and William and Mary. And he still had his way. He won. And it's hard to beat defensive, you know, high-end defensive players so consistently, but he did it with very little effort, it felt like. So I think...
Yeah, you know, you watch...
Sorry.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it does... I'm with you. I think he's going to translate well. Something about his game to me, I don't have those same concerns as you see with some prospects coming from those lower levels of competition. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, you bring up... some interesting games from him. I don't know if you watched the Northeastern game where he had the triple-double, but to me, that just showcases what a really vast skill set he has.
Yeah, and he did it all that game. I mean, that was actually one of the first ones I watched, and I had no clue. I didn't look at the box score before watching it, and I saw that he had like 20 points, 10 assists or something, 10 rebounds, and then he was at 9 of whichever other one he didn't have. And it was incredible. Like, he dominates the games, and it's not forced. It's not like, you know, we've seen a lot of one-man shows throughout the country where the offense runs through them and everything is fully catered to them. The ball is forced into, you know, they get baskets forced into their hands almost. You don't see that with Riller. Like, it's a pure, clean takeover.
Yeah, he's very efficient. It's not a lot of forced shots. The team's not, you know, it's a good point you bring that up. The Suns and Devin Booker had that like 80-point game or whatever, and it was very clear they're like, we're gonna manufacture this. When it comes to Grant Riller, it's not manufactured. Like, it's within the flow of the game, and it's very natural.
Right. You'll never see empty stats for Grant Riller. I can't imagine him becoming that guy. And a lot of it roots to what you said, though, the efficiency. You don't see him taking bad shots, for him at least, because his good shots may be someone else's bad shots, some of those mid-range shots, but you'll never see him, you know, take away from the flow of the offense. It's all very natural.
You know, and speaking of that Northeastern game, you know, he has that amazing stat line. And I watched that game full in, and then I also kind of watched the stats. And it was it's weird to say this, but like for a triple-double, it was kind of a quiet game, if that makes sense. Like, if you didn't know he got a triple-double, you wouldn't have, like, known it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and And that's kind of like, that's what I was kind of getting at is like, yeah, he was playing a really good game, but it just, you didn't realize that, I don't know, it didn't feel like a triple-double, kind of like you said. I mean, I saw Tyrese Haliburton this year against TCU. I was at that game where he had the 20-10-10 game, and that was pure
dominance. Yeah.
I mean, that was him doing quite literally everything. But in the same, I'm not, you know, bashing Riller for this at all, but it was completely different 20-10-10 game. It wasn't almost because he had to. It's just how it was, you know, and that's how it's been every game with College or Charleston, was see how far he can take you.
And, you know, Halliburton's a good example of another guy that really has to do a whole lot, because his Iowa State team's not great and they're playing at a higher level of competition. And so it just comes off differently, like you said.
And it's very hard, obviously. Like, I hope people don't take that as a direct comparison as prospects or anything, but yeah, I mean, being a one-man show is not an easy task. You have to be incredibly talented to be able to do that.
Yes. I think that's very true, especially because for guys that are supposed to be a one-man show and they also put up statistics, to me, that's just so much more impressive, because if you're a team and you're going to defend, you say, all right, this is the one guy we have to stop, and you still can't do it. That just tells you how impressive a player like that can be. One thing I wonder about him, and I've seen this raised by other analysts, is what do you think of his passing? Do you think that's going to be something that he's going to be able to rely on at the next level? Or do you think he's going to really be kind of focused more as a shooter? So I guess a better way to put it would be, do you think he can play the one, or do you think he's going to mainly play the two, or is it kind of going to be a kind of a mishmash?
Yeah, I think he's probably best as one of those, not necessarily combo guard, but playing next to another point guard, which is a wave in the NBA anyways. So that benefits him. I think he's a lot better of a passer off of screens, which is huge in the NBA. Obviously, pick and roll is like the most run play. Out of isolation is a little bit different. Not as high on him as a passer there, but I still think he can get by. So I see him still as a pretty good playmaker at the next level.
Yeah, and he has, now granted, he's a little older, so you know, you say he can improve, but it's a little different, you know, saying it with someone that's his age versus someone that's, you know, 18 or 19. But, you know, in his time at Charleston, you know, from year one to year four, you've definitely seen him improve as a passer. So I do think he can still have room to continue to grow in that area. But I don't think he comes in and you're saying to yourself, like, this guy's got elite vision, this guy's an elite passer. I don't think that's who he is. But I also don't think the team that drafts him is going to say that's who I need him to be. And it'd be really beneficial, especially if he is with some sort of a facilitator that's got some size. So, you know, if you were to be able to play him next to like a LeBron James or like a Luka Doncic, someone that, you know, is more ball dominant, that's going to be able to set him up. And as far as defense is concerned, you know, Riller's, you know, 6'1", 6'2". If you can have someone that's got a little more size, that can definitely help him out as well.
Yeah, and it's not, and kind of like you said with the asking him to be a playmaker, you know, he's not Colin Sexton. He's not going to get out there and just drop maybe one or two assists a game at most. I think he's capable. You know, you're not going to write home about some big passing games from him. And, you know, he might just get five assists a game. But it, like you said, it depends on who he's next to. I'm a big fan of his fit in Orlando. You said kind of next to the big guard. I know Markelle Fultz doesn't fully fit that, but I think he's like 6'4", 6'5", with really long arms. And, you know, he loves getting to the basket. I think that's also one of his perfect fits, too. And his range is so wide that all these teams that we've listed are really realistic possibilities, too.
Yeah, and you're not the first person I've heard mention Orlando as a team that would be a good fit. And I could completely understand. You know, you look at Orlando, that's a team that plays some pretty good defense. But offensively, they're not always a great team on that end of the basketball. And so Grant Riller could step right in and really help them in terms of scoring.
Yeah, and he's a day one starter there, and I think he fits well with Fultz. He kind of checks all the boxes we just talked about to an extent, too. I mean, you know, Magic are one of the worst scoring teams in the NBA. They can make up for it with their defense. You know, they can neutralize his defensive woes, which is really important for him. Plus, he gets that other guard, kind of bigger guard next to him. That's a good defender.
Yeah, definitely. I think that makes sense. Now, recently I saw you moved Riller to 16th on your big board. Now, I'm curious if you happen to recall where you had him on your first board and what went into your decisions to move him up.
So in my first board that I did in December, you know, I don't know if I had him. I'm going to be 100% honest. I hadn't dived into him yet and bought into the hype that I'd seen from some people. And I I horribly regret that, like, first of all. But in the last time, the first time he appeared in my top 60, I think he was like number 40, some, like 40 to 45. I know he's in that middle second round grade. And he just continued to climb. The more I watched, it was a little bit harder for me to get access to him at first. But the more I've watched, I mean, how do you not fall in love with the guy? I haven't found anybody that is low on Riller yet.
Yeah, he's one of those prospects. Now, there's always going to be prospects that are polarizing. Some people are high, some people are low. But to me, he's just so easy to root for, and he's so easy to watch and say, all right, I enjoy this style of basketball. I think it's very translatable. And so I want to be the team that drafts him. That's kind of where I look at it, especially in a draft that's not considered to be as strong as others. I think this is a chance where you say, all right, I'm going to take the gamble that moving from the level of competition he's at now to the NBA, I'm going to take the gamble that that's going to pay off, because just statistically, he's so much further along than a lot of the other prospects in this class.
Yeah, and he adds to, he's part of that middle tier where it's, for me, it's, I think 20 is my range where there to 60, you can convince me any one way or the other your order, you know, and Grant Riller for me now has escaped that in that middle pack. I think he stands out a little bit just above on that for me.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I've actually seen, it's not common, but I've seen a few people that have started to put him like lottery. I saw one person put him in the top 10, which that might be a little extreme, but it just kind of shows you how much he's really starting to grow on people. So this is actually transitions well then to I got a multi-part question here. So where do you see him going in the draft? Where do you think he should go? And now you mentioned the Magic, but are there any other teams that you think would be good fits?
Yeah, so I think he could go as early, I think 15. Like, I mean, that first non-lottery spot, depending on who it is, like if that's Orlando or Minnesota, I think even Minnesota could use him. I don't know if there's a single team that's a bad fit. So I could see him going anywhere, honestly, from 15 to all the way down to the mid-20s, probably Philadelphia, actually, so early 20s. I don't see him getting past there. That just seems like too perfect of a fit. But the ideal fit, man, Orlando, sorry to have used this already, but Orlando is just so perfect. And he's from there. Like, he doesn't even have to buy in, I feel
right.
Like.
I mean, it's like, no, I agree. That's a really, really good fit. And it's easy to see why they would like him.
Yeah. And, I mean, even Milwaukee would be good, too. That was another team that crossed my mind because, I mean, who knows what their point guard future looks like. George Hill's older. And then, I mean, Eric Bledsoe, I think he's 30 already. So, I mean, who knows? And they need kind of just general depth. You can never be hurt by somebody who can contribute right away at a really, you know, valuable position. So I think he can go anywhere in this draft.
Agreed. And I'll tell you right now, as a Timberwolves fan, I'm being from Minnesota, I definitely wouldn't mind if he was available at 33. I'll tell you that. Now, let me, one more question for you, touching on your Mavs. So who's a player that you would really like to get on the Mavs, but that is also, I guess you would say, realistic in the area you think they'll probably draft?
So that's the million-dollar question. So I've got three guys. I want him. I'm purely all in on a wing just because, I mean, I've seen it too many times. Justin Jackson, hasn't shown up, and it's costing Mavs games off the bench. And I know it's a, you know, minor thing for the 9th, 10th, 11th man to be kind of complaining about. But I would say Josh Green is probably at the top of my wish list. Sadiq Bey, and then Desmond Bain. Those would be the three guys who all of them check a huge box for the Mavs, especially on the wing. And they help get younger. They grow with Luka. I think it'd be really good. Probably at the top, though, is Josh Green, and he stands out the most just from pure upside.
I think if you could get one of those three players, they'd be great additions. I'm a fan of them. And you can never have too many wings. That's kind of the way I look at it, because wings are so versatile, especially in today's NBA where it's a lot more positionless. So I can definitely understand the reasons why you'd like those players. Let me end with this. Do you have any stuff that you have coming out? I know you recently started a podcast. So anything you want to promote, and then where people can find you on social media?
Yeah, so, I mean, the podcast is, speaking of actually Desmond Bain, that was actually our last episode, Desmond Bain and Denny Avdia. But yeah, you can find me on Twitter at MavsDraft and on MavsDraft.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining us, and hopefully we can touch base again, maybe closer to the draft or on another one of our prospect-centric shows.
Yes, appreciate you having me.
Thanks again. Okay, welcome back to the Robin Hoop Draft Show here on Dash Radio's Nothing But Net channel. We are fortunate to be joined by Grant Riller expert Ryan Teichler, a College of Charleston alum and supporter. Ryan, thanks for coming on the show this week.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Rob. Maybe I'll be Brian Windhorst of Grant Riller.
Oh, I like that. I like that. That's good. That's good. So you're big, obviously a big fan of Charleston. You understand Grant Riller very well. So when you think of Grant Riller as a player, what is the first thing that comes to mind to you about his game?
First thing is he's a scorer, right? Yeah, he's done some media and he's talked about his game and everyone says, oh, you know, Grant Riller is a scorer, but he says he's more than that, which he is. But first and foremost, this guy can fill it up, man. His Twitter handle is G Gets Buckets, and that's very apropos. He can score on all three levels, but man, when you watch him play, he can get to the hoop and finish. It's unbelievable, his body control. He can finish with the left and the right. He's got a good pull-up game. His three-point ball is a little streaky, but it's above average.
You know, when you talk about his three-point ball, is some of that maybe a shot selection issue or him trying to maybe do too much on the offensive end? You see some players as talented as him sometimes take on a larger load than they maybe should, and sometimes you see their efficiency drop a little bit.
You know, not really. His efficiency is off the charts. I mean, he only takes about 14 shots a game. And his three-pointers come in rhythm. He's not chucking the ball. He's not a volume scorer. I think the kind of tweak I would make to his three-point ball is it's really flat. It doesn't have a whole lot of arc. So it has a tendency to rattle out on him. I'm sure coaches have noticed this too. It's a little different in person. It has a little more arc than it looks like on TV, but it's still a bit flat. I think they're going to make that tweak at the next level, but you know, he shot 39% or 38% his junior year, shot about 36% his senior year. So it's not terrible. I think it just needs some minor tweaks.
The other thing too is he's not putting up a ton of attempts. If I'm right, I think it was around four or five attempts a game from three, which isn't a huge sample. So if he could keep that, you know, 36 to 39%, and then let's say he's taken, you know, more like five or six a game, I think an NBA team would be pretty happy with that. And yeah, he's a very efficient player. And when you look at his shot, it's very, very impressive. But specifically, or I guess maybe more generally, on the offensive side of the ball, he's one of the most gifted players in the entire draft. You know, you talk about his shot. What else have you been impressed with in terms of his play on the offensive end of things?
Yeah, so, I mean, going back to his efficiency, it's almost like you're shocked when he misses, especially when he starts driving through the lane.
Agreed. Oh, yeah.
So he kind of played combo guard, you know, point and then two guard throughout his career, kind of transitioning more to the point guard role. But when he plays off ball, he has this great first step where it's a jab left and then goes down on his right hand and he just blows by people. You know, so his first step is absolutely elite. The other shot that I really like that he has is he has a step back in the mid range and he also has a side step. So it's a catch, a hard side step, and he creates a ton of separation. He has great elevation on the shot too. So he creates space and he has a pretty quick release. And he can do it from all these different angles. I mean, his vision is great too.
Yeah, and that's actually that brings up a good point for me when I watch him play. One area that I didn't think he necessarily was able to showcase at Charleston was his passing. I think it's a pretty underrated aspect of his game. So would you consider passing to be a strength that he's going to bring to an NBA team?
So I wouldn't say he has elite passing at an NBA level just yet. You know, like I just said, he played kind of off guard for 2 years. Joe Chiele was the point guard his freshman and sophomore year. He still in the Charlotte Hornets organization, kind of bouncing between the G League and the big squad. So, you know, it's only been kind of 2 years that he's been transitioning to point guard, but he does have good vision. He does share the basketball well. You know, he passes. Is he an elite passer at this? Is he like a Ja Morant triple-double machine? Not quite, but, you know, it'll get there.
Yeah, I feel like he definitely has room where he can grow as a point guard. And like you said, he hasn't been playing that position the entire time. I watched an interview with him recently where he really felt like he's going to be able to play the one and the two, including defensively at the next level, which I think validly he is going to have a little bit of flexibility. And he can, just because he's so good off ball in terms of shooting, cutting, driving, that sort of thing on the offensive end. There's lots of things to like about that. One concern people have about his game is on the defensive end, where a lot of people question the effort that he brings. Now, I have seen some flashes where he looks really good, but I do think that's a big question mark in my eyes of what he brings on that side of the court. What are your thoughts on his defensive game?
You know, you're right, and you can notice this too, because, you know, he's the best player on the floor almost every time he steps on the floor. So you're just kind of naturally watching him, and it could almost look like he's taking some series off. You know, he's really slumped back on defense. He's not that active. You know, and there's been some questions among College of Charleston fans of, you know, is he just kind of taking this off because his load is so heavy on the offensive end, you know, playing point guard, being relied on to score, or is it just kind of a lack of a lock-in focus? Because when he's locked in, he's got really active hands. You know, he can create steals, create turnovers. And when he does, you know, good luck stopping him in transition. But there does seem to be a bit of a lack of focus at times. And I don't know if that's just load management or if it's just, you know, he hasn't locked in on defensive end on that possession.
And that's fair. You know, there's other prospects. You look towards the top of this draft and a guy like LaMelo Ball, who has to handle such a huge load offensively that he, you know, you're going to see, you see lapses on the defensive end. When I watch Grant, I don't necessarily say to myself, he's lazy. I've seen people say that he's kind of lazy on that end. I don't see that. I just think he maybe loses focus at times. For example, I don't know if you've seen this, but like on the defensive end, he seems to ball watch a little too often, if that makes sense. So he'll get beat where he's watching ball and he's not keeping track of his man, for example, and then he gets cut behind. Little lapses like that. But we talk about how he's fast with that first step. I think on defense, where we've seen those flashes, he moves laterally really well, and he's a very underrated athlete. So I do think he could be a really good defender at the next level. A team just has to get him to fully buy in and also be able to get him that help so, you know, his load can be a little more balanced, I think.
Yeah, I agree. There are some defensive lapses, but there's also defensive flashes too. You know, he's had multi-turnover games where he's turned guys over on three straight possessions, you know, both in the open court and then baiting a guy to pass the ball. He almost plays possum a little bit, both offensively and defensively. But perhaps he plays possum too much on defense.
I think that's fair that some guys, you know, there's players that in the college level, you see high levels in steals, for example, and maybe part of that is because they gamble a little too much. And sometimes he does gamble a little bit, but I think as he grows as a player and he gets that next level, a lot of gambles can be more, I guess, high-end gambles where you take less risk and you kind of understand passing lanes a little better. So as he grows as a player, I do think that that can be an area where he can definitely grow. And speaking of growth, how have you seen him grow as a player during his college career?
So it's interesting. You know, he was recruited out of Ocoee, and then he blew out his knee his freshman year in a closed scrimmage against Clemson. And all reports out of this scrimmage were he was the best player on the floor, period. You know, to the point, I think he had 20 points by the time, you know, he hurt his knee. Brad Brunell, the Clemson coach, yelling at his assistants during the game, you know, how could you possibly miss on not recruiting this kid? Like, who is this guy? And why isn't he at Clemson, you know? So he redshirts his freshman year, and then you saw flashes his redshirt freshman year, man. He made one play against William & Mary on the baseline. He makes a little jab step and just blows by a defender for a two-hand dunk, and you're like, whoa, right? Flash forward to his sophomore year. Team's loaded. Team made the tournament. You have Joe Chile at point guard. you have Jarrell Brantley, now plays for the Jazz at the power four, but Riller is the best player, right? They go to the tournament. He wins the CAA tournament MVP. They go play Auburn. We're down three. Who takes the last shot? Riller. He's fouled. They don't call it. But you can kind of see this trajectory, right? Blows out his knee, becomes a good player. Now he's the best player on the court. And then his junior and senior year, he's just a stud.
Yeah, I think that made a big difference in terms of his career arc, that having that injury. And he actually talked about kind of post-injury and then up till now, he definitely hasn't showcased his athleticism maybe as much as he thinks he can. And in the interview I saw, he thinks that when the NBA game comes, he's going to be able to showcase that even more. And I think that's true, because when you look at these younger players, you're not, if you're in another team, you're not focusing on like rookies. You're not focusing on the young guys as much as you are some of the veterans or some of the better players. And so I do think maybe it'll be in limited minutes, just depending on the team that he goes to. But I do think he's going to have a chance to showcase that, because again, he's not going to have, you know, the weight of the entire team on his shoulders. I do think that's going to make a pretty big difference. Now, when I watch him play, he always looks very calm and collected on the court, which I think can be a great asset. But my concern sometimes is he a little too calm? You know, we talked about on defense, maybe there's a little bit of lack of focus, or sometimes I feel like he's just at times on his game, he's a little too nonchalant. I've seen that at free throws too. I was watching one game and I can't think of what team they were playing, and he goes to shoot a free throw and he just kind of throws it up there. Like it was like he didn't have a care in the world. So do you feel like that aspect of his game, while it can be a strength, is sometimes a weakness?
So I think it's a bit of his personality. He's just kind of a quiet guy. You know, he's fiery. When you know, defenders start chirping at him, he'll chirp back. And he can get really intense. But yeah, if you look at him sometimes, he doesn't look engaged. But I think that's just kind of being kind of a quieter kid. Doesn't have like a, you know, outgoing, in-your-face personality at times. I think, I don't, you know, personally know him, but I think he's just kind of a shy guy, shy kid.
Yeah, and I think some people are like that. You look at guys that translate from the college level to the NBA level. Some guys just have that personality. You look at players like an Andrew Wiggins, or you know, there's lots of players that we've seen jump into the NBA where maybe that's just, they don't have that fire outwardly. But one thing I've seen from Grant, he definitely steps up in big moments and big games. And that's why I think he's going to be, you know, really good at the NBA level. Or at least he can be, going to the right situation. Going back to his offense, one thing that I just, time and time again, when I watch him play, is so impressive specifically is his step back game. I mean, you talk about some of the greatest NBA players, and I'm watching him and I'm seeing shades of their game. And in a recent interview, he talked about how one guy he's really tried to emulate is Dame Lillard. What are your thoughts on that aspect of his game, specifically the step backs?
Yeah, the step back and the sidestep, he creates so much separation. It's a really explosive, exaggerated sidestep or backstep, and he gets the shot up clean and quick. I mean, it's tough to stop when he's on. And the important part about creating that separation, being so explosive, is, you know, he's listed at 6'3". He ain't 6'3", man. So he does need to have that explosiveness. He does need to have that lift to get over longer players. But he has it, and it is crazy efficient, especially when, you know, he's so fast with the blowback move. He gets a guy with a back step, and then he's stepping back himself. You know, he's got like 5 feet to shoot.
It's interesting when you watch his game, or when you first dive in, if you haven't really seen him play, and you see him try these step back shots, your first reaction, at least mine was, I was like, ooh, what is that? Like, maybe let's not do that kind of shot. And then as you watch him more and more, all of a sudden you're like, he's really good at this. And he all of a sudden you don't look at it as like he's settling. This is legitimately something he's really high end skilled at. And I think that's really cool about his game. And it's something that he brings to the table that I don't think a lot of guys coming into the league have. You mentioned the height. How tall would you say he actually is?
So it's kind of weird. If you watch him play and just kind of watch him walk up the court sometimes, he almost has a bit of a limp. And he doesn't have great posture. So I would say he's probably about 6'1". There's no chance he's 3.
Yeah, and once you get to the NBA, we don't know what kind of pre-draft process they're going to have, but once you're in the NBA, they're so into exact measurements now. So it's like, we're going to find out sooner than later, you know, the exact listings that they have for some of his physicals. And I think we'll see that. Let me end with this one here. How do you think his game is going to translate to the NBA level? And is there a team out there that you think he would be a good fit on?
So it's a great question. And it's something that I think there's a lot of GMs that are scratching their head over Brillers. Because I think he has the potential to make about 20 GMs look like idiots. But at the same time, I think he has a bit of a lower floor, too. There's some issues to his game. When bigger defenders have pushed him out, past the arc and have really bodied him up, that's where he struggles a little bit to get his shot and to get past guys. And you see more of that in the NBA. But at the same time, you watch him, he's just so productive, and he's been so productive for 3 years now, and he's so efficient, and guys don't really play that much defense in the NBA. I think he could really score it at the next level. I mean, I think he's potentially, a 15 to 18 point, guy in the league. Which if you're drafting 22, 23, that's a home run. So I honestly don't know. I could see this guy, if I had to make a guess, I think he goes about 25, 26. I think he sneaks in the first round. Is there a specific NBA team? I don't know. Like we talked about earlier, I think he'd be best kind of playing combo guard his rookie year. So maybe someone with an established lead guard would kind of be the best fit up front. But, I don't know. I think he's going to be good wherever he goes.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Having an established lead guard and maybe someone that has a little bit more size could make a big difference. If he was playing, just as an example, let's say he's playing next to like a Luka Doncic or something, a guy that's got some more size, and then you have Grant that can defend the one, you could definitely see some added benefits there. And with his offensive game, I don't think there's any team out there that wouldn't love to have that type of scoring on their roster. And maybe that's the case. Maybe in year one, he is more of a playing more of that off-ball guard. I guess we'll see. Time will tell on that. Thanks again, Ryan, for joining us. Let's end with this. Tell people where they can find you. I'm sure people would love to reach out and talk about one of your favorite players, Grant Riller.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on Twitter. I am Cougie Monster. It's an abbreviation of the College of Charleston Cougars. You can check us out. There's a College of Charleston fan page called CFCFans.com. We're a bunch of insiders, chit chat, and there's some good information on the team and Riller himself.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining us, and hopefully we'll touch base again down the road, maybe closer to the draft.
You got it. Thank you, man.
Welcome back to the Robin Hoop Draft Show here on Dash Radio's Nothing But Net channel, where now we are joined by College of Charleston alum and founder of the Holy City Hoops blog and podcast, Tommy Glasgow. Tommy, thanks for joining the show this week.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here.
So let me start with this. What, I guess for the listeners, what do you focus on with your Holy City Hoops blog and podcast?
Yeah, so Holy City Hoops covers mainly the College of Charleston men's basketball team. We also cover the Colonial Athletic Association a little bit, as well as mid-major basketball in general. But for the most part, it's just based on the CFC Cougars. We started about 2 seasons ago and have created a nice little network of College of Charleston basketball fans.
Yeah, very cool. And it's obviously been a fun team to watch over the last few years. And obviously a big part of that is our focus for this episode, which is Grant Riller. So let me start off with a question. What stands out to you the most about Grant Riller?
When I think about Grant Riller, definitely a guy who's changed the trajectory of College of Charleston basketball. He was part of Earl Grant's first recruiting class and was instrumental in that program returning to the NCAA tournament for the first time in 20 years, putting that team kind of back on the map of college basketball. That's just, you know, his impact on the program. But as a player, probably one of the quickest players I've ever seen, especially his first step. He's just liquid on the court. He can get anywhere. He can get into the narrowest crevices of the defense. And when he gets to the rim, he's one of the best finishers at college basketball, in college basketball. So just a super dynamic player, especially on the offensive end, and just an all around great kid.
Yeah, he's a really, when you watch him play, he's a really easy guy to cheer for and root for. Mm-hmm. Now, when you think of his career, do you have a game or a moment that really comes to mind when you think about his last 4 years?
Yeah, there's been a couple. He's closed out games against pretty much every opponent in the CAA. He's hit game winners against James Madison. He's hit game winners on the road at Elon this past season. He's had triple-double. He was the first player in CFC history to have a triple-double. He did that his senior year. But, you know, for me, there's individual games, but at the end of his sophomore season, which is really when he broke out, he led the team on a double-digit win streak to close out the regular season. He was the most outstanding player at the CAA tournament that year that Charleston won it, and had a great showing against Auburn in the NCAA tournament. So that whole run where he really just established himself as one of the best, not just mid-major basketball players, but college basketball players, was a really fun time.
Yeah, you mentioned the triple-double, and it was the game he had against Northeastern earlier this past season. One thing I noticed when I watched that game is I watched the game in its entirety, you know, without knowing kind of what the stats are. And if you had told me he got a triple-double, I don't even know if I would have believed you, just because it was such a quiet, like, a triple-double. Does that make sense?
It was, yeah. Well, he does a lot of guys will box out for him, and he'll grab a rebound and just go down the court north to south. So he got a lot of rebounds early in that game, and he's always, you know, kind of sucked defenses in and kicked out, and guys were hitting shots that game. So he was well on his way at halftime, and you know he's going to score the points. So it was a pretty quiet triple-double. I would agree with you.
Yeah, and not even in like a negative way, just it's one of those things. And I think that's part of his demeanor. When I watch him, there's this, he just kind of has this like quiet confidence, and he's always so calm. Would you say at Charleston, he's been probably one of the leaders of the team?
Yeah, and he's definitely a lead by example guy. He's not the most vocal kid on the court or off the court, and he didn't really need to be. He was teammates with a guy named Jarrell Brantley, who plays for the Jazz now. Who is very vocal. So Grant didn't need to be that guy, but he's just a quiet guy. But everyone respects him because he's one of those kids who's just in the gym early, leaves late, puts his head down, does his work. And he was under recruited. So he definitely plays with a chip on his shoulder. So it's just sort of a quiet confidence that he plays with. He never really gets rattled. But it works for him because he's still effective.
Do you have any sort of concerns when he jumps to the next level about how I at times I feel like he's so calm, he's almost nonchalant. Like, for example, there's been times where I've watched him shoot a free throw where he kind of just throws it up there. And some guys, that's okay, because what it is it's like a confidence thing. With him, every so often it's almost like he's too relaxed, if that makes sense, whether it's free throws or sometimes like on the defensive end. He kind of just, I don't know. Does that make sense? I feel like he's maybe just a little too calm at times.
Yeah, I can understand that. You know, one thing to consider is that he did everything for the Cougars this year. So his teammates that he went to the tournament with both graduated, went on to the NBA. And his senior year, he really had to pick up some slack. So he did everything. He was this team's second leading rebounder. He was the backup point guard. He led the team in assists. He obviously did a lot of the scoring. He played a ton of minutes. So I definitely saw times where he looked gassed, and, you know, he was kind of just going through the motions either on defense or at the free throw line. I think the concerns at the next level, you'll hear a lot of people talk about his age. So he was a fifth year senior. He missed his entire true freshman season with an ACL injury. So he's up there in age, and people worry about what his ceiling is. He definitely struggled against teams with length. He's not the the biggest guy, but when he would face teams from the Big 12 or the SEC or even some CAA teams that had a guy who could kind of check him with their length and slow his speed down, he struggled with that. So I think that's an honest concern. And, you know, he's not like typical mid-major guys who can fill it up from three. He was much more of a get to the basket guy. So I think there's some concerns about his 3-point shot translating at the next level.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing too, is his 3-point percentage dropped 39% to 36% from year three to year four. And then you also hear people that are worried about his defense. But I think your point is very valid, where he's one of those guys that had to do so much. At a certain point, you have to decide, you know, I can't give 100% on every single thing. I got to pick and choose. And I think he really focused on the offensive side of the game because that's where the team really needed him to be most effective.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The team was lacking in scoring options, so they needed Grant there. And also just to kind of develop offense on his own, which is a specialty of his. But Earl Grant has always been a defense and rebounding coach first, so you're not going to play if you're not giving some level of effort on defense, even if you are Grant Riller. And he's shown when he's locked in that he can play defense well for his size. So I think with a more limited role at the NBA level, he could lock in and do an okay job.
Yeah, when I look at the transition from Charleston to the NBA, I don't have those same concerns that a lot of draft analysts have, where they, you know, you see people going, I have questions about his effort on the defensive end. And to me, I do see him lock in where, when it really has to, you know, when you're in a possession and you say, all right, this is what we have to get. He's shown that he can do that. And he's very athletically gifted in terms of being able to move laterally and just, you know, stay in front of guys when he wants to be. So I think, like you mentioned, when he gets to the NBA level and he's got more help and he's not going to be called to do as much, I think he's going to be able to be a much more complete player.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I think a lot of people have preconceived notions about mid-major guys playing in the NBA. They usually fit the mold of undersized, not super athletic, but they can shoot. And that's not really a fair comparison for Grant Riller. He is actually quite athletic for his size. You've maybe seen some of his clips on SportsCenter where he's had some jaw-dropping dunks, but and he's not much of an outside shooter. So I think when you look at the tape and when you really dive into him with your research a little bit more, you see that you know, he can play defense. He does have a lot of athleticism, and he just has an array of moves to get to the basket. It's not so much an outside shot.
I think one reason people overlook his athleticism is he doesn't always show it off. And part of that, obviously, he had, you know, early in his career at Charleston, he had that injury, and it takes some time to come back from that and really get back to where you need to be. I listened to an interview with him recently where he talked about that, and he said, you know, he didn't really showcase it as much as he could have at Charleston, but he's hoping at the NBA level, he's going to be able to really impress some people.
Yeah, and he'll tell you that that injury was a blessing in disguise because he was barely maybe 140 pounds coming out of high school. Very bouncy, very athletic, but maybe didn't have the frame to hold up to the contact that he was going to take at the rim. So that redshirt season really allowed him to get into the weight room, work on his upper body strength, and maybe he sacrificed some athleticism early on, but long term, I think it definitely helped him absorb contact later in his career. And instead of bouncing off of guys, he was able to kind of finish more. So I think the injury was maybe a good thing for him because it helped him long term.
Yeah, I definitely think that makes sense. Let me ask you this. What are your thoughts on him as a passer? Because I know in that same interview that I was just touching on, he talked about how he really feels he's improved, you know, from year one to year four as a passer. But at Charleston, I don't know that they really had him showcase that much. Do you think he's a pretty good passer?
I think he took a big step forward his senior year because the team needed him to. I would say he's not the guy who's got outstanding vision and he's going to see guys moving before they get to their spots and just read the defense and react. But he is definitely a kick and shoot guy kick and shoot guy. He draws a lot of gravity and a lot of attention when he goes to the rim and he can find guys. He's also a pretty good pick and roll player. So we had some bigs who could shoot at Charleston, and he was able to always kind of pick and pop with those guys. So I think he can make all the basic passes you need. I don't think it's a weakness in his game. And he knows that he needs to add to that if he's going to play point guard at the next level, which is probably based on his size, the role he's going to have to play. So I would have confidence in him getting better at that. But right now, I think he's already pretty solid.
The big thing, and you kind of mentioned this, is the gravity of his offensive game, which do you think that's going to translate? Because that's going to be the key. Because he's not like this elite guy that anticipates where guys are going to be, or maybe doesn't have like elite vision, he needs that offensive gravity to transfer, because if he gets to the NBA and people focus on him, it's going to be that much easier for him to make those passes and make those reads. So do you think that's going to transfer? Because personally, I think it definitely will.
Yeah, I'm in the camp that it's going to play in the NBA. He's just so lightning quick. He's got crossovers. He's got sidesteps. He's got step backs. He can put some English on the ball and finish at the rim from anywhere. So I think that's going to translate to the NBA level. Obviously, the guys are going to be bigger and stronger and faster, but some of the moves he can put on display to get some space and to get a shot off, I think it's going to work in the NBA.
You kind of touched on this before. I look ahead and I kind of wonder, what's his position going to be in the NBA? And I do think, given his size, point guard makes a lot of sense. But I also think he's going to be able to play some shooting guard if he's, depending on the team and depending on the lineups, because in the NBA, there's some bigger facilitators. And I think in those lineups, he'd be pretty effective playing the two because he's a good enough scorer.
Yeah. And his spot up shooting numbers and his, you know, no dribble shooting numbers aren't bad. So if he's, you know, moving without the ball and spotting up, I think he can still excel there. And yeah, I mean, with the way the league is trending with more space and with more shooting, I think he can play either position, and especially in smaller lineups. So, he's played the one, he's played the two, he played more two than one most of his career. But in preparation for the draft, Coach Grant had him playing some backup point guard. So I think he can be comfortable in either guard spot.
Now, I want to end with one last question for you. When all is said and done, how good do you think he can be at the NBA level? So like what do you think his ceiling truly could be?
It's a good question. I was trying to think of the best NBA comparisons for him, and I couldn't pick one. You know, he's definitely, like I said, north-south guy. He's going to get to the rim. He can finish from anywhere. I think he can be a rotation player for a long time. And I see a lot of mock drafts with him in the 25 to 45 range. You know, if he gets into the first round, I think teams are going to be more committed to his development. If he falls to the second round, maybe he spends some time in the G League. But I think his ceiling is to have a long NBA career. The first guy to get drafted out of Charleston was Anthony Johnson, who had a decade plus long career in the NBA and just was able to adapt to the NBA each and every year. And I think Grant can do that. He's an extremely hard worker. Yes, he's coming in with some age, so I think people want to cap his development, but he's added to his game every season, and I think he can adapt to different NBA styles, different coaching styles, different teammates and rosters. So I think he can play in the NBA for a long time. It's just going to depend on him finding the right fit.
Yeah, and the key for him is that, like you said, the right fit, going to the right team. But as far as NBA teams are concerned, if I'm an NBA team, I would love to have Grant on my team just because, like you said, he's continued to improve every single season. Granted, he's a little older, but there's still room to improve. It's not like the guy's 30 years old. I mean, there's room to improve. And so if he goes to the right team, gets put in a good situation, I think he can develop and become even better. So time will tell on that. Thanks again for joining us. Let me give you a second here. If you can tell our listeners where they can find you on social media and then where they can find your blog and podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, so the blog and podcast is available on holycityhoops.com. You can follow at Holy City Hoops on any of your favorite social media channels. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. The podcast is available anywhere, whether it's iTunes, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcast, you can listen to it. And then you can find me on Twitter, Tommy Glasgow. I'm at King_Kress. So King_Kresse. That's a nod to a legendary Charleston basketball coach. But find me on Twitter there. I'm always talking college basketball, basketball in general, mid-major hoops, and of course, Charleston basketball. So as the draft gets nearer, I'll definitely be keeping tabs on Grant and maybe picking up a jersey for whatever team picks him.
Perfect. Well, thanks again for joining us, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks again to all our guests. I definitely encourage you to check them out on social media and any other platforms that they are available. As far as we are concerned, if you missed any of our show on Dash Radio's Another Minute channel, make sure you check us out in podcast form. We can be found on Spotify, Stitcher, Podient, iTunes, and anywhere else podcasts are found. Again, this has been Robin Hoop bringing rich takes to the poorly informed. And until next week, we'll see you.
With the first pick in the 2003 NBA draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select LeBron James.
With the 13th pick in the 1996 NBA draft, the Charlotte Hornets select Kobe Bryant.
With the first pick in the 2015 NBA draft.
With the third Minnesota pick in the 2018 select. NBA draft.
With the first pick select. In the 1998 Luka NBA the draft.
The first pick in the 1998 NBA draft. Select the Orlando Magic.
Michael Olcandy.
With the first pick in the 2019 NBA Draft, the New Orleans Pelicans select Zion Williamson from Duke University.